Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Kathy McEllicott to the broadcast. Kathy is Executive Vice President, Chief Information Officer, and Chief Technology Officer of McKesson Corporation, a healthcare services and information technology company with $190 billion in annual revenue, ranking it fifth on the Fortune 500 list. As CIO, Kathy is responsible for all technology initiatives within the corporation. And as CTO, she guides the overall technology direction for the company's healthcare technology products and provides support and guidance for application development processes company-wide. Prior to McKesson, Kathy served as the CIO of Emerson, St. Louis-based global manufacturing technology company. Previously, Kathy spent 22 years with General Electric, holding multiple information systems leadership roles, and ultimately becoming CIO of supply chain for GE aircraft engines. Kathy was recently appointed to the board of directors at ArcBest, a publicly traded $2.6 billion revenue freight transportation and logistics company. She holds a Bachelor of Business Administration degree in computer science from Penn State University and a master's degree in business management from Xavier University. I recently caught up with Kathy at McKesson's offices in San Francisco, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed the methods she uses to attract talented IT staff, and Principle 3, project and portfolio management, as we discussed how she balances and leverages shared services and independent business units in a federated business model. We also discussed the growing importance of interoperability in the healthcare industry, IT's role in the application of data analytics across the enterprise, and the role of McKesson Ventures, among a variety of other topics.
This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much.
Kathy McEllicott, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Hi, Peter. It's great to see you. And thank you very much for coming out all the way out here to talk.
It's a great pleasure. The honor's mine. Kathy, I thought we'd begin with your role. You are the Chief Information Officer and the Chief Technology Officer of McKesson. I thought we'd begin with a breakdown of the responsibilities associated with each of those titles.
Sure. Well, you know, McKesson runs as a federated business model, and just as a little background, we are about $189 billion. And our services we provide are a lot of distribution of prescription medicine, medical products, software solutions, analytical solutions to our partners. So we sit kind of in the middle of this healthcare ecosystem. You know, we're working both with the payers, the providers, the pharmacists, and the end patients with that goal to really deliver better health and improve patient outcomes. So my job as CIO/CTO is to make sure that we're using technology and innovation effectively in the business to really help us be successful and to yield better outcomes for our patients. So what that actually amounts to is a lot of different things. In this federated model that we run, our technology groups are responsible for things all the way from shared services, trying to gain leverage and efficiencies across, you know, the size of our business, as well as partnering with each one of the businesses on some of the platforms for our development, for our software solutions, as well as our data and analytics, again, trying to provide a common platform that we can then leverage across our businesses. And then even investigating a lot of the new technologies. So we've got an extended enterprise architecture group across our business that we pull together. So as we look at some of those emerging technologies, that we're getting the brain power and brain trust across the company, and then look at how we can use that innovation across the business.
This is obviously, as you point out, a very sizable organization. The business units in several cases could be Fortune 500 organizations themselves. You started to talk about some of the things that are done commonly or thought through more commonly. Is there a way to sort of wrap up or define those things that you think are best suited, at least within this enterprise, to do commonly versus those things where the business units themselves have a bit more liberty?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think these federated models, and anyone who's worked in a business that kind of runs a federated model, you have a little bit of a natural tension that helps you balance between getting too far in the wrong direction, so balancing between that shared service and complete independence of the business. So we have several kind of, I'm going to call them governance teams across the business that we use. One of them that we'll start with is our IT senior leadership team, which is the CIOs in each one of the business units. And so we come together, and what we've done since I've got here is made an agreement that any technology decisions we will bring into that group. So we'll have at least the discussion to say, is this something that makes sense? Could we get leverage and economies of scale across the company? Is it something that multiple businesses have the same challenge so we could solve once instead of solving many times? Or is it something that maybe is so close to a particular product out of that BU or a particular customer segment or group that it really makes sense to do out at that business unit? So what we're always trying to look at is how do we do things as quickly as we can, not to leave value on the table, but to get leverage. And at the end of the day, to really provide a better experience for our customers. So biggest point, I think, is to make sure we have the conversations on that. So we have a lot of good debates. I think we've had some good wins. I think we've also been very honest in things that make sense to keep out at the business units.
Especially for ideas that are done commonly, how often is it your group at the center, so to speak, that is coming up with the ideas versus perhaps an insight that comes from one of those other CIOs, the business unit CIOs, who has an idea that it turns out actually has a broader applicability than just within their business unit? Is there a rough estimate as to how often either of those levers are pulled?
You know, I actually think it's pretty balanced. So as an example, where we're running a common ERP platform across the business, we'll see some things from a distribution perspective that maybe our U.S. Pharma group and our Celesio business in Europe or our specialty health group also has a similar challenge. We'll say, you know, let's try and do this as an organization across all of McKesson. Let's do it once and pull those groups together. We'll have other things where an innovation idea might start out in a business unit. We just actually yesterday had our senior leadership team in and had one of our business units talk about a solution that they've built that we really think can help us from a 360 view of our customer across McKesson. So that's a good idea that percolated out in the business unit that we're bringing in, and now we think we'll be blowing that across the corporation. So as I said, I think the key point is really making sure we've got people together to have those conversations and to have that discussion. We have another organization, which really is our business unit presidents, and we also use that as another forum to drive things we want to do across McKesson, so especially when we get into the customer view, because we share customers across our business units. So what we're trying to do now is say, how do we improve that experience? How do we improve the engagement of our customers with us? And that, again, I think is going to drive some other collaboration across the business.
That's great. I read that McKesson CEO John Hammergren called interoperability the, quote, biggest challenge left for our industry. I wondered how you sort of see that trend and how you see it evolving and where you'd say the industry is towards making or meeting that objective.
You know, I think interoperability is still a very big focus. You know, if you think about the digitization of the healthcare industry, it really started with those electronic health records. And that certainly was a monumental effort for the industry to go through. But as we started digitizing all that information, it became clear that we needed to be able to share that data, and that interoperability of that information became a very big push. And so I think some of the technology, some of the standards that have come out are really helping us move that agenda forward. It really focused a lot on the provider side, kind of the payer-provider interface, but it really is extending out now to the end patient. And so I think we're going to continue to see that move to try and figure out how we get that information, be able to have patients get access to their medical records. You know, our Commonwealth Health Alliance, which is a consortium of the healthcare companies, McKesson obviously is a member of that. They recently announced that some of their members are not going to be providing that information back out to the end patient. So I think we're trying to see that. I think that's where the evolution is going now.
You've already talked a little bit earlier about the role that data and analytics play and the fact that it's a big objective and something you're thinking about across the entire enterprise for very good reason. Can you talk a bit about the value you think it brings to the enterprise and then the role that IT plays in working with your colleagues across this massive company to ensure that that's operating in a top form?
So data and analytics, to me, is such a big topic. You know, you could probably talk about it for an entire hour that we're together, but you know, I think the benefits can be in different areas. So certainly we have data analytics across our own internal operations. So how do we do better supply chain? How do we improve the efficiency of our supply chain? How do we make sure that we're, you know, ratcheting up the bar for us on our customer expectations and the delivery of the prescription medicines? So I think we can use data and analytics in that space to really hone. I talked about the 360 view of the customer. We're really focused on how to make that engagement easier for our customers, how to bring better value to them, how do we help solve their problems better. But the better we understand them, I think the more that McKesson can do to help. And so getting that information from all of our BUs for common customers, I think it's another example of the benefits that that data and analytics can give. And then, of course, we've got great solutions that we provide back out to our partners that use a lot of the data and analytics information. So I think you'll see that continue to grow. I think we keep looking at different ways to kind of reap more benefits from that. When we first formed our internal data and analytics group, it really was a little bit of an incubation out of our business strategy organization. And the technology team was providing a common platform, and then we had another organization, our strat group, that was working with each one of the businesses. And as we kind of evolved that model, we saw that there were benefits for really pulling those groups together so that we have a team that really understands not only the technology platform, but the use cases that we're really trying to drive and how best to architect the information and deliver that visualization of that information. And so we pulled those groups together. We actually moved that into the entire organization, to the technology group. And what we're doing is partnering with each one of the businesses again. So if you get back to the question on where do you draw the line between central services and independence, this is one that I think is a great example of how we're working with the businesses to give a platform that they can leverage, that can utilize the repository to put their information in, give them common tools, share some of that top talent of our data scientists, but give them the power and the speed to go and consume that information, do their own analytics, be able to create their own solutions on top of that. That's where we try to get that balance of getting the speed to the business unit, as well as trying to keep some leverage at the central organization.
You run technology in perhaps the biggest and best known technology ecosystem there is here in San Francisco and Silicon Valley, just to the south of us. It strikes me as we're talking about data analytics and the sort of talent that's necessary in order to realize that, that you have the blessing of tremendous supply, but you have the curse, perhaps, is not too strong a word, of competition all over the place and a lot of a world of opportunities for those people who are talented. And I wonder how you think about that as you recruit great talented people to come to a company that's far past its startup days in an area that's known so much for startups. What are some of the incentives you provide for people to join here as opposed to other organizations? And how do you think about both the blessing and the curse we just referred to?
So we've actually created several technology hubs across the country because we feel that there is talent across the United States. We actually are creating a technology hub in Europe as well. And the reason we're doing that is so we can get the best talent. So I think there is phenomenal talent, and I love the energy of the Valley out here. There is tremendous resources. There is huge competition for it too. So depending on what types of skills we're looking for, as an example, we're building a cybersecurity hub in our Scottsdale facility. And that's because we're seeing a lot of resources to be able to add in. A lot of our architects were pulling out of the San Francisco area because we tend to see a lot of the innovation coming out from the startups up here. And so we try to look at where those resources are best located, and then we'll try to create a hub in those areas. And we also create those hubs where we also have business presence because we feel that that integration between our business and technology resources is really important. So we're also doing a lot in partnering with universities as a way to try and get in the youngest talent, because I think the diversity in age is important in our organization as well. And so we're finding as we're partnering with those, either through research projects, through internships, it gives us another avenue of pipeline to recruit, which also helps us on that competition, because people get in, they can kind of see what we're doing, they can get excited about the mission of the company, which I think is a great recruiting mechanism, as well as see where some of those innovative ideas and technologies being used in our company. And I think when they see that, it's a nice draw to bring them into McKesson. That's worked well for us.
Having had the opportunity to speak with a lot of your peers as chief information officers of big companies, I know that a lot of them have as a goal to join the boards of companies. It's increasingly the
means of validating one's progress in their career. It's a way to learn a new industry and a new company and have an advisory role as opposed to an operational role in that capacity. You actually have achieved that as a member of the board of directors of ArcBest, a publicly traded company. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the steps you went through in order to realize that opportunity, whether it was something you had as an explicit goal and had steps to get there, if it's an opportunity that presented itself as a pleasant surprise. It's a follow-up question to that, interested in the advantages you bring as a CIO to a board, the lens that you put to the conversation as a result of your intellectual makeup and your day-to-day responsibilities as a CIO, CTO.
I love being a board member and wearing a different hat on occasion. The way I actually came into that was I had a recruiter that called me. I would say for someone who would be interested in joining a board, I think if you make that known to your own board or to if it's a company that you're really interested in, to make that known, I think would get you closer to being on a board than just waiting for someone to call you. But that actually was the initiating factor. What I found going through that process, which again, I think would be advice to someone who's looking at that, is how I would sell myself as a CIO to, say, McKesson as I'm interviewing is completely different to how you position yourself and the value you can bring to a board. Because you're not the doer, and they really don't want people running the company for them. What they want is people who bring in a different perspective that can bring in the right kinds of questions and advice for them as they think through their strategy, so that we can help them be more successful in that business achieving the strategy. So as a CIO, CTO, I think what they're looking for is more that digital thought process. And I will give ArcBest tremendous credit. It's run by a fantastic female CEO, Judy McReynolds. And they already had in their minds this vision of really trying to digitize their business. And so what they were looking for is someone who could kind of come in and help work with them on that strategy to help that make real for them. I think that's what they were looking for me. I think what I'm getting from ArcBest too is another perspective of how a board runs. I think I can bring in experiences I've had not only at McKesson, but also my prior roles in global businesses that can help them. I think some of the questions that we ask and the thought process we go through as a board on the ArcBest helps me think about how I might want to package and position information back to our own board. And I will tell you, I learned from our own board great ideas and suggestions that I will bring back into ArcBest too. So I think it really is a nice way for me to grow and challenge myself in some different ways that I haven't had before. But also, I think to bring benefit both to McKesson and to ArcBest. I think from a CIO, CTO, I think just based on our background and the fact that almost every company is a technology-based company now, there's so much software permeating through most of companies, I think CIOs and CTOs are going to be sought after even more for board seats than they have in the past.
Are there certain skills that you had or skills that you bolstered as a result of this new opportunity that you would advise those who are behind you but hoping to walk in your footsteps? Are there certain skills that don't naturally evolve in one's career in IT that you've had to lean on or use especially or grow as a result of joining a board that you would advise others to focus on?
My natural style, I'm probably very results-oriented. I like to move. I like to kind of make a decision and get forward and realize the value from that. So what I've had to do as being a board member is be a little bit more patient, to be able to ask the questions, to prompt the discussions. And so it's been, I don't know if it's necessarily a different skill, but it certainly is a different style that I've had to bring in. So I don't know that there's a class necessarily for that.
Yeah,
use one. But that's probably one of the nuances that I noticed. I think from background and experience, what's helpful, I think the diversity of the experience, having the global experience, and I really believe having that technology background is a big win that most boards don't have today. And if you look at where every company is going, is much more on the technology side. I do think that more boards are going to be looking for that technology, digital thinking to come in. So I think it's a great opportunity for CIOs.
You're part of a growing sorority of CIOs who are women. Certainly a lot of progress has been made. More progress can be made, needless to say. I wonder, as you reflect on your career, kind of the people who were influential to you as you rose, and likewise, what sorts of steps you've undertaken to help the next generation of women perhaps realize a similar station within the company.
I'm very happy to see an increase in the diversity in the C-suite. I think it's great, and I think it's only going to continue. I think to make sure that that does continue, we want to make sure we're giving people the right experiences. So I think growing yourself outside your comfort zone, taking a risk, taking a challenge is probably one of the best ways to grow in your role. So I will think back to a job I had when I was working for GE and actually took an international assignment for 2 years. And that really stretched me more than I probably anticipated when I had taken that role. Putting yourself into a different culture, a different business, you don't have your network, you're starting from scratch, you're learning a different language. All of that really helps bolster and made me a stronger leader. So I think that's one thing people can do. I think the other, if we're looking to try and bring that diversity in, is to really look across our business. You know, we try to get a lot of women and minorities interested in STEM at a young age. And I think creating that pipeline and getting people interested through school is very important. But that takes a longer time to actually materialize into a business. So I think we also need to be looking across our business and say, who in the functional areas where we've got technology embedded into, do we have people that we can rotate into the technology organization, give them that experience, give them that exposure? And I think that's another way to kind of create that pipeline that will create more potential for folks to roll up into these jobs.
I'm also curious, we've talked about a number of rising trends relevant to McKesson IT, but to IT departments more generally speaking. Are there others, as you look sort of out, say, 3 or 5 years that particularly excite you that you're beginning to investigate?
You know, certainly data and analytics, I think, has huge runway in front of us, as we mentioned before. So we're excited about that. We're spending a lot of time and energy in there. I would say the other one that really is piquing our interest right now is blockchain. We've actually joined a consortium of healthcare companies that are investigating what that power is within our industry. And I think there is some pretty disruptive potential for us with that. And that actually is a great example of a partnership with our McKesson Ventures organization. They had actually teed up this opportunity of this consortium to join based on one of the startups that we're working with. And so we have engaged in that. But I think there's huge potential going forward for our industry. So we're actually starting a little bit of, not Skunk Works, but a little bit of exposure for our architecture team of just some small little projects to get more experience in blockchain so we understand the technology better. This is an area that we'll be working and partnering with our businesses to say, where do we see the fit and where do we think the value is for McKesson?
You mentioned McKesson Ventures. I know from past conversations that a lot of what that organization is doing is investigating, you know, areas to invest in or areas that will be of interest to the company. And naturally, given your prior insights as well, so many of these opportunities and innovations have technology at their core. To what extent, what's the relationship between your organization and that organization in terms of helping suss out what sorts of opportunities might be there and how best to use technology?
Yeah, so we work very closely with the Ventures team. I'm actually on, we have an internal board for McKesson Ventures, and I do sit on that. So I get to look at and evaluate some of the companies that are coming through, which ones we're going to invest in. And what we've done is actually pulled folks out of our teams, technology teams, to help the McKesson Ventures team vet out some of the startups. And then, as I said, there's other partnerships that we're doing with our business units with some of these startups. So good, I think good collaboration going on between us.
Kathy McEllicott, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks, Peter. It's been a lot of fun.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' 5 principles of World Class IT. The 5 principles are as follows. Principle 1 is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.